Bang, bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Tasia.
I'm Melissa.
And I'm Lozzy.
And you can, as always, find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangBangersPod. And email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to FangBangersPod@gmail.com. Today we are talking about Season 1, Episode 8, Fourth Man in the Fire. This episode originally aired October 26, 2008, and it was written by Alexander Wu and directed by Michael Lehman. And then we've just got a little summary from Wiki here. Sookie tries to hold herself together in the wake of another possible tragedy. Tara is amazed by Letty Mae's turnaround and considers similar therapy for herself after lashing out at Sookie and Sam. Jason's new squeeze, Amy, charms the crowd at Merlot's but shows a darker side to Jason when their V-juice well runs dry. Renee pops a question to Arlene while Sookie is babysitting her kids. Later, at Bill's request on behalf of Eric, Sookie agrees to use her gifts to help Eric, a powerful vampire sheriff, root out a thief at Fangtasia.
I still laugh every time these synopsises say, or well, even in the episode when they say, like, V-juice, it's such a silly thing to call that drug. They, like, said it really in the first episode and we're, like, really committed to it.
I'm just gonna lean in. There's nothing else to do.
It feels like over time it can evolve to have a much cooler street name, but I don't see this name sustaining its way with the kids of tomorrow, with the youths.
I feel like just V, like why V juice? Yeah. V juice is silly. V sounds cool. I would do V. I would not do V juice. Sounds like a steroid.
Yeah, I mean it kind of is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of everything. Like, this drug makes zero sense, you guys.
I mean, it makes hotness sense, which really is all you need in this show.
Yeah. All right, so do we want to go character by character?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, do we want to do first impressions of the episode? Like, what did you think, Melissa?
Oh, I think that this is a fine episode of television. This particular episode is overshadowed, I think, by one specific scene, because it's just another one of those, like, iconic True Blood moments that even when you're seven episodes into the show and you think about what is True Blood, that scene is in this episode.
Exactly. I remember one thing and one thing only about this episode, like, ever, like, for future reference, and that is that scene.
It's the cute proposal scene, right?
Yeah, like, we're all romantic. Yeah,
yes. Yeah, I think this episode really serves more as like an extension of the previous one. Like, I think it makes a good like two-parter, but on its own, it's just, you know, it's just a continuation of that story.
I was expecting the scene to be the cliffhanger for the last episode.
That's what I was thinking too. Yeah.
And I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and in my mind it was a cliffhanger because the episode ends there. I mean, just kidding, there's more, you know, juicy stuff, no pun intended, after that.
I think Tasia's point about like it being a two-parter with the previous episode is right on, right? Like, I think that after two episodes ago, we had a really slow episode where there was just like the fallout of Graham's funeral and like everyone sort of being in their fields. It's just been like, okay, we're going to make up for just doing character shit for an episode by just doing plot, 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 plot.
Yeah,
plot.
We're pumping the plot gas again.
Yeah, so, but it was, I agree, like that. It's weird that we will not be ranking that as a cliffhanger, that scene, because it feels so cliffhangery.
It really does.
Okay.
Oh, Sookie and Bill, what a cute couple. Goals.
They are, like, very domestic in this episode. Like, they're babysitting together. Bill's, like, really putting it on for the kids. Like, it is.
When he does his cutesy little, like, fangs, his pizza fangs.
It's. Are they, like, I assume that was candy corn. I say that not knowing what candy corn is.
I mean, that makes sense. I think candy corn's disgusting, so I don't know why they would have been eating that, but
because who would?
To be fair, he did. They did say they were having pizza, so pizza makes way more sense.
Yeah.
But I did not see him there with his kitchen shears crafting his fangs out of the piece of pizza, so I think that you might be right.
It's funny, too, because this episode, I feel like in my memory, it's mostly like the Sookie and Bill like cute domestic stuff, but I forget that like half of this episode is Sookie like freaking mm-hmm. out, not knowing if Bill's even alive. Like she goes and she sees the, she looks in one coffin, which like really like look in all of them maybe. Then you can figure out the fourth one is a human body and not vampire soup, which the other ones all are. Which I think would have like eased a lot of her anxiety throughout this episode. But yeah, like I think. I forget, like, this does feel like half of this episode belongs to the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is kind of like a really weird, like, cut in the middle of it where it's like panic that Bill is dead. And then it's like, oh, happy domestic Sookie and Bill.
Sookie and Bill are reunited and all of their problems fall to the wayside. They are mm-hmm. reunited. Mm-hmm. They are stronger than ever. They are.
Including, like, Sookie. And, like, most of the time, I'm, like, very happy for Sookie to stand up for herself and tell everybody to fuck off when it comes to, like, who she decides to sleep with or have romantic relationships with or anything. But I think in this episode, the way that she's, like, lashing out, I think specifically that scene with Tara really bothers me because mm-hmm. Tara comes in and is like, hey, like, she's trying to tell her about, like, this, you know, amazing transformation her mother has gone through and how, like, that would obviously be just rocking Tara's world. That's like her entire childhood has been one way and suddenly her mom has done a complete turnabout. And she goes to try to tell Sookie about it. And Sookie like doesn't even say like, hey, I'm worried about this other thing. I can't really like, I don't really have like the spoons for you right now. Like, can we like put a pause on this? Or like maybe like think about somebody else for a second. But Sookie immediately is just like, you know, fuck you. You don't care about anybody but yourself. Like I have my own problems, but you're like not sharing them. So can you really... Like, what do you expect?
I don't know. I mean, that fight is quite hard to watch, actually, because, mm-hmm. you know, these are two good friends, so it's not fun to watch them fight. I definitely was like, the problem is that you're 100% right. Like, Sookie is, like, so in her head, she can't just accept, like, Tara's good news. But equally, Tara, like... does not read the scene very well.
Yeah.
And then goes after Sookie for like being bit by a vampire mm-hmm. without any provocation. I just feel like both of them are just like fundamentally in the wrong.
Yeah.
neither of them do well. And like, I think I described it as hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's what Tara does to Sam later as well.
Mm-hmm.
Until this moment, between Sookie and Tara, I hadn't really considered that Sookie and Tara hadn't seen each other since Sookie and Bill had sex, and also since the funeral, which is where this stuff kind of popped off with Tara's mother. So both of them have had these like transformative things happening to them, and they're so far up their own asses that they haven't realized that like while they were going through something, their best friend was also going through something. Neither of them just have like any space for that to be true, but we've been spending time with these characters, so we know it's like it would actually be really great if you two could just sit down and have a nice conversation catching each other up with what's going on, but neither of their demons will allow for that this morning.
It's funny because I always like think about this show and I think about like how Tara and Sookie are like such close friends, but really the reality of it is that even here in the first season where you really should be establishing that friendship, it's like they have been at odds almost the entire season. Like mm-hmm. what we get is a lot of like flashbacks and how they, what they have meant to each other in the past, but their lives are clearly kind of diverging and going in different directions. And, you know, maybe neither of them is very happy with where the other one is going. And there's like, there's starting to show some like wear and tear in their relationship. Mm-hmm.
I had in my notes,
I think that's interesting because...
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that the flashback is actually Tara with Jason, isn't it? It's not with Sookie. And I haven't read the books, but my understanding is that Tara isn't in the first book. Yeah, is that right?
She's there, so, I think, but like in mention. Like yeah, I think like, at one point right. she comes in like...
character.
She's not a significant
not
character
like
in the books
Sookie's
at all.
Best friend, right, yeah. So it looks like they... they kind of they want to make her a more significant character. They want to make her Sookie's best friend, but haven't fully fleshed out the reasons why that is true.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, Melissa, you were saying.
Oh, I don't really remember. Oh, I had in my notes, like, in the scene that, like, the fang marks are a sticking point for Tara, but they also are for Sookie, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's finally got to this point where if you don't accept this about me, you don't accept me. Like, Sookie's relationship with Bill is now important enough to her that it is her. You know, you can't split those hairs with Sookie anymore.
She's definitely making Bill her entire personality at this moment. Yeah. And, like, she's happy that he... And I get, like, she's clearly thrilled, and she should be thrilled that, you know, he's alive. She loves him. But, like, she can't even, like, go to work and take an order without, like, exhausting her customers with, yeah, like long-winded explanations about how he's really alive when clearly they don't care. Like, you can't expect everybody to care about him in the same way you do and maybe, like, you know, read the room a little bit in that way, too.
Yeah, she's definitely like that, and that later scene is definitely like first crush. No one has ever loved like I have loved, mm-hmm, sort of thing.
Yeah,
but I do think the point with the going after the neck bites, and to your point, her and Tara haven't seen each other, is that like last episode Sam basically yanks, mm-hmm, the scarf off her neck and has a go at her.
So
about
violating.
It. So, yeah. So what a prick. Okay. More on that later.
More on that later.
So, like, I think it is a really sensitive point to her. So, mm-hmm, again, that's another reason why she's like, I don't like it, this, and I'm really upset because this guy I'm massively in love with, I think, is, as you say, soup.
Yeah.
I mean, she's really going through it. She's lighting a candle vigil for him in her house as she goes onto the porch in a storm. Like, she's taking flowers to his grave in a sundress. I mean, I made this joke about, like, what if she cuts her feet on a stick when she's running over there because she never wears shoes. And I think that's fine as a country person, but maybe not as, like, a vampire girlfriend. But in the book, it specifically talks about how, like, in this run, she is, like, cutting her legs and stuff on twigs. And it is just...
Sookie doesn't know how to do anything by half measures.
It's like for the drama. I love it. It's so
she
silly.
Reads a lot of historical romance novels, and I love that for her.
Yeah, and like she obviously had to be dressed in this way so that we could get the full like whiplash of this like horror movie scene where there is a hand just coming up from the dirt and grabbing Sookie, and she thinks that she is being like kidnapped probably. And yeah, you know, Bill has to do his like trademarked Sookie to be like, it's me,
Sookie,
your dirty vampire boyfriend.
Yes, so Bill's hand shoots up out of the ground, and very quickly horror turns into relief of some form,
and definitely a future douche.
Yeah, like it. I mean,
and like, listen, I am not out here advocating for douches. They're not healthy, but in this circumstance, I feel like there is some sort of flushing out that is warranted. That man is fully like 90% dirt.
I mean, the time spent.
Oh wow, you're describing Melissa's perfect boy. Then, so.
The time spent from Bill inside the dirt to Bill inside Sookie is like 7 seconds. This was very romantic to me when I first saw this episode. Like, the passion, the relief, the, like, spooky, mm-hmm, graveyard, very into it. And now all I can think about when I see this episode is yeast infections.
Yeast infection, 100%.
Okay, so I'm, like, my reaction to this, and this is very obvious response from different experiences, but my reaction to this is still so much hotter than garbage sex.
Oh,
but what I'm hearing here is actually maybe not.
I think that garbage
maybe
sex,
the fact
you
that
think...
you're halfway still in dirt.
Yes.
That's the ben- I mean, like, the garbage sex wasn't explicitly putting garbage in somebody's body, and dirt was definitely going in Sookie's body. That's the...
He was rubbing her with garbage,
I mean,
though. Like,
to
there
be,
was,
I'm
like,
gonna be honest,
leftover cabbage and
I
shit.
Would trade the future yeast infection to, like, get out of having the garbage sex. Like,
yeah, the garbage sex definitely smells worse.
You take your Monistat.
That is the
and
that,
you
those
get
are the only
it.
Options
I
on the table.
I would never get over, mm-hmm, just like the mental knowing of having had garbage.
Of garbage.
Hi, Mom.
Okay. All right. I feel like we've settled on 50-50 here, I think. Por que no los dos? Okay. your point earlier, Tayshia, is like the contrast between everything up to the end of this scene and the beginning of the episode that is to do with them, and then everything after this scene, which is just like, with one dream vision exception, like domestic bliss, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so weird.
And I do want to bring up that dream, because it is, because we do talk a lot about, like, you know, Buffy and its influences on vampire television culture. But I do, there is an episode of Buffy where I think Angel is having this dream where he's marrying Buffy, and then he like bursts into flames because it's outside. And it's kind of like that same anxiety of like, you aren't meant to be together because this person can't share that kind of life with you. And in this time, it's Sookie having the dream that Bill bursts into flames in her kitchen during just like a regular domestic breakfast moment. And I thought that was pretty clearly inspired by Buffy. Just wanted to call that
out.
No,
I think you're right. I can't remember the episode, but yeah, it does. The problem is that all that popped into my head is the times when the angel is actually outside and not on fire, and how goofy he is about being like,
look
guys,
at how not
how
on, fire
on fire
I am.
I'm not on fire.
Melissa, one of these days we're going to get you to watch Buffy and Angel.
I know.
If I have to go back to Chicago.
You can watch like the first three seasons of Buffy and then... yeah, but it is like it's... this is a very weird comparison, but like it's like the dream that Linda Hamilton has in Terminator 2 of Apocalypse. Like, it is this sort of, the way it suddenly creeps up, and the sort of fire and the sort of physical horror, the body horror of Bill, like sort of starting to bubble effectively, like as you said, he's vampire soup, he's slowly coming to the boil, and he's about to boil over. And it's quite harsh. Like, it's after we're sort of bouncing around a bit, like it's after Arlene and Renee get engaged, so it's specifically a reaction to Renee saying, you know, maybe they'll be next, provided they change the law. So, like, there's a couple of indications there. One is that whilst there are some vampire rights now, vampires are not allowed to get married to humans. But it is definitely like a reaction, a Sookie reaction to Arlene's impending fifth marriage. And how it might not go well.
And it's like Sookie seems to finally be settling into like the practicalities of being in a relationship with a vampire. Like, she makes like a little comment later in the episode, like, "Oh, we'll never have breakfast together." And it's like, I know you knew that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somewhere inside you knew it, and it has just taken, you know, taking these steps into a serious relationship to finally like realize, oh, we really won't be doing any of these normal things. Having breakfast, having kids, like potentially even having a marriage are things that are all inaccessible to her if she stays in this relationship.
I mean, I think the analogy between the metaphor between her having to take the vitamins and potentially a sort of like prep type metaphor to having sex with HIV positive people. I think there's, I don't know, it's Alan Ball, so I feel like he's probably playing around with that metaphor quite clearly. Bill going, you know, I've fed on you, you should have vitamin, what was it, B12?
Mm-hmm.
I kept wanting to say it was vitamin D, but then I was like, no, that would be a different joke. adjusting to a different life, and also like understanding weirdly that your partner's society and debts, societal debts, i.e. the Eric things that happen later, now become your problem and your business too. I think it's really, really interesting. I mean, it's weird how quickly it happens to her, but it is very interesting.
Yeah.
she probably could have stayed under Eric's radar for longer. I mean, maybe not given some more things that we come to know about, you know, Sookie, but that's for much later. But she just had to go into Fantasia and poke around trying to clear her brother of these murders. And she just had to, like, let on a little bit that, you know, she could read minds and warn them of an incoming police raid. So, yep, so now she's over there at Fantasia just peddling her wares, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some hardcore victim blaming by Melissa just now. So. I do want to talk a little bit about the scene when she does babysit Arlene's kids with Bill. It's such a cute scene, guys. It's so fun. They're very normal. Like, Arlene's initially, like, going, why is he here? You didn't say. And then she's like, you know, Sookie's, as usual, her back is up, is like, well, you know, whatever. I didn't have to tell you. And Arlene is not unreasonably like, I have a right to know who's looking after my kids, I think.
Yeah, like, from a parent perspective, I don't think that's unreasonable necessarily to, I mean, what she's coming from, like, a place of, like, bigotry, but, you know, in the same vein, like, if I have young children, I don't necessarily want my friend and her boyfriend to watch, because that's, you don't know that boyfriend necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, Arlene is clearly, like, a racist, so, like, that's right. That's a different thing, but, like, in general, you know, like, a strange man watching your children is not the safest necessarily environment.
She didn't turn down Terry Beaufort's offer to watch her kid just so Vampire Bill could be watching them,
right? Then she's clearly discerning about who she leaves her kids with,
because she was, like, mean to Sookie quite recently. So she had to go be like, I'm so sorry I said horrible things to you. Will you please watch your children and also not hang out with your boyfriend tonight?
Yeah.
I think she thought Bill was dead at the time.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that. Yes. The possibility of him being there wasn't really in her mind.
She probably, two shocks when she showed up and saw Bill.
It's such a weird reaction, but it's so kind of weirdly understandable. It's not almost the bigotry, as you say, Tasia. It's like the strange men. It's like, it's misandry. Yeah, that's what I'm going for. No, it's not, you know, it's it's understandable, I think. And I
understandable
think,
caution, right, for, like, strangers to be with
caution
your young children.
Best, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, Bill basically is like, we're having pizza, which I understand is delicious, question mark. They didn't have pizza in Civil War times, I guess.
Yeah, and he's not allowed to have that sauce.
Louisiana.
That's, like, why I wouldn't want to become a vegan, because I like food.
We've talked about flavored blood, right?
Yes.
Flavored blood, drugged blood.
Cinnamon in the blood is an angel thing. Like, it's Cordelia experimenting, but...
It depends on the vampire lore, right? Because Buffy vampires can eat... They just don't need to. Like, they do it for funsies.
Well, and, like, Basil has to still eat human food. He needs both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, which one's Basil?
Simon Snow series, yeah.
Right. Let's pretend I know that.
It is a Rainbow Rowell book, YA series.
Okay. I like Rainbow Rowell. Mm-hmm. But I know her from all them from their comics work.
Yeah. Yeah, so they go to Fantasia because Eric has summoned them to investigate.
We have skipped. I want to put a pause on that. We have skipped an important scene where Eric is in a bath in Bill's house.
Yeah, do you see the slightest sliver of dick in this scene?
No, his thumb is perfectly placed.
Wow, Atrio.
I was very much like, is that a thumb or a dick?
Listen, Eric can summon me like this anytime he pleases.
Yeah, if you just want to show up in my bathroom.
Listening to ancient Swedish and reading a book, I love that for you and for me.
My favorite was, like, Eric said, I've messaged you 3 times and you didn't respond. And Bill saying, I hate using the number keys to type.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Especially considering that, like, you know, Eric is... around 1,000 years old, right? And Bill is like 100 and something, and Eric's all about, like, he can text. Eric's sending texts, but Bill is like, no. Bill's like the boomer dad.
Well, yeah, this is where you draw the line on new technology. Like, think of all the things Bill has had to adapt to. but mm-hmm. he's drawing the line at T9.
I do like how Bill is with Eric, like, and he's, as you say, he's like way younger than Eric and many other vampires, but he has this sort of quiet confidence, and it might just be how Stephen Moyer plays him, but I really like, I'm enjoying Bill a lot more, I think, on this rewatch, and perhaps it's sort of in counterbalance to how much I hate Sam, but it's I'm like there's something about the sort of calmness and the confidence with which he deals with the fact that a 1,000-year-old vampire is having a bath, or even like when he shows up to Molot's the other episode when the other vamps are there, and he's like, you know, he's there, he's sort of energized because obviously Sookie's in danger, but he's like, I know why you're here, it's not for them, it's for me. Yeah, fine, I'll join you next, we'll go. Like, he, I don't know, Bill gets it done, man.
Their relationship strikes me as very, like, older brother, younger brother, where Eric is, like, the older brother that is, like, intentionally annoying the little brother who can't really do anything about it because older brother's bigger and tougher than him. So he's got, like, Bill's got this kind of, like, annoyed, grumpy deference for Eric because he has to, while Eric is just being, like, a little shit. Like a very charming little shit, and I think it's really fun.
That is the inverse of the relationship between Mike and but yeah. Anyway, Eric basically calls in a favor on Bill, which is to use Sookie to interview potential
interview with the vampire.
It feels like a very It feels like a very petty reason to bring Sookie in, but maybe he's just testing to see what she can do.
Oh, yeah, I have no doubt.
Yeah. In the book, Bill has Sookie drink more of his blood before they go do this so that she is like has some enhanced powers.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's kind of weird.
And like not to get into spoiler territory, but I think like exactly what happens in this episode is exactly what Eric wants to happen. Like I think that he wants her to sit down and figure out who is extorting money from him, like obviously for like money reasons, but also because he wants it to come to that head.
Yeah, because especially with like poor Ginger, I mean this woman really has been through a lot.
She's got a brain like Swiss cheese at this point. And you know what? I just realized that, like, that actually was a spoiler.
Well, yeah, because this is the cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah. As I was saying it, I was like, oh, wait, no, I don't think that doesn't. Yeah, yeah. My bad.
Someone accidentally spoiled the next episode.
I think any spoiler talk notwithstanding, I think you're completely correct that this is what Eric wanted. Whether he had an ink, I think that if it was one of the humans, they would have been able to find that because I don't think that any of the humans in their employ would have been able to like withstand Eric directly asking them, you know, with the glamour and all that. So using Sookie to narrow down who it was, it's not one, forces something to happen. And even before that, Sookie's sense of righteousness is like, I'll make a deal with you. If you involve the human police with human bad guys, I'll come read minds for you all the time. And it's like, Sookie, you dummy. I mean, I get wanting to protect humanity. I mean, kind of, if you steal from these vampires, you're a fool. And I just don't know what I have for you at that point.
I just think, like, are there any humans there that some of the vampires haven't fed off of, and is there any credibility that any of those humans would have been actually stealing from Eric and Pam, more to the point, right? Like,
yeah,
like the list of suspects is narrow. So
I feel like they knew, like they probably would have like, and you know, interviewed Ginger herself, and like they immediately knew. They're like, oh, she's been glamored, her memories have been like, you would have known just from having a 5-minute conversation with her yourself. You didn't need to involve Sookie. Mm-hmm. So that was like very intentional. And then at that point, you know, it's a vampire. And the only vampire in that room that you don't trust is probably Longshot. Like between Eric and Pam, like there is no no question about the loyalty in that relationship. Anybody else is up for betrayal. So Long Shadow is like the only other person.
So yes, anyway, we get to the cliffhanger, which is they realize that she's been glamoured, and everyone immediately goes, well, obviously it was the ethnic person who glamoured her. Partially because Long Shadow jumps across the room and starts attacking Sookie, and that's where we end. Do we want to do cliffhanger reviews now,
yeah,
or do we want to do...
I think that works, since we made
okay,
it here.
So our list of cliffhangers is 7 episodes long so far. Our number 1 cliffhanger is that Gran is dead. And our number 7 cliffhanger is that Bill bit Sookie during sex, which wasn't really a cliffhanger. So what are we feeling, guys? I feel like this is around the Four Coffins cliffhanger, around the last episode cliffhanger. I think it's more than Sookie turning up at Bill's house with the weird vampires there.
So that's exactly where Melissa and I had this conversation. We watched the episode together last night, and we settled on just after the Four Coffins, right. And just before Sookie turns up at Bill's. So the new number 5 is where we settled on. And if you agree, we should definitely do that one.
I'm in complete agreement with that. And unlike last episode, I will edit that after the record, so I don't have 45 seconds of dead air to fix. Who wants to talk a little bit about the early Letty Mae stuff?
The Letty Mae stuff is so frustrating because, and I mean, she says that she understands that, you know, coming clean now is not going to undo an entire lifetime's worth of horrible parenting, but she still kind of does act like it does. You know, she's dumping all of her booze and she's making hotcakes, but she's also like going to church and pretending like, oh, it was, you know, that was in me the whole time. It's just the demon's fault. The demon's fault that this happened. Mm. The demon's fault that I was a bad mother. And it's not the demon's fault. It's because you're a raging alcoholic and a bad person. And going to church now and having some, you know, bunk ass exorcism does not change the damage that you've done to your child. And bringing some church lady over to like kind of lecture you about your decisions and having a demon yourself, like, is just not, that ain't it. I don't like it at all.
Letty Mae and her church friend do provide some comic relief in this episode. Like, I love when they're having that conversation about like, oh, she got a demon in her too. And, you know, the church friend saying, you know, her son or her whoever, you know, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like every negative anything can be, you know, pinpointed to a demon for these people. And it is really funny. Uh-huh. And by these people, I mean, like, the church people.
Church people, yeah.
Yeah. And it is really funny. I do that. What?
No, I think you're about to say the thing that I was going to say, which is the hat thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Went. She's like, you know, just wearing a crazy ass hat doesn't make you like a good person. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And it just, I kind of lost my train of thought. But I mean, just what you were saying earlier, which is that like, I am on the Lafayette side, which is that if the exorcism worked, it was worth the money,
mm-hmm,
even if it wasn't real. But yeah, at the same time, that only really works if Letty Mae is saying like, I am still responsible for all of this.
Because it's going to continue, yeah, to, it's like a wound that can't heal for Tara because there's no closure in that. Like, your mother suddenly changes. Great. Like, you have a good mom now, but how does that help you heal from anything? Because there's no accountability. There's no, your mom going, you know, look, I had a problem for a really long time and I hurt you a lot because of it. There's none of that. It's, oh, it was not me. It was never me. So like, I feel like that, I'm glad that she's better and like how, whatever she had to do to like get to that point to be better is like absolutely worth it. But like the lack of accountability just means that Tara can never come to terms with it herself. Mm-hmm. She has to just kind of roll with it.
Yes. I 100% agree with that. I think the total abdication of responsibility by saying it's a demon's fault means that you can't, well, what do you say to that? Mm-hmm. And the idea that pancakes makes up for child abuse is very offensive.
Yeah.
It's too quick. Like, you can't heal that quick.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly can't heal without responsibility and accountability. And Letty Mae just being like, I'm cured now, so everything's fine, and I'm going to church. And not even, does she even apologize?
No.
Apologizes.
And she was obviously going to church during active addiction. So the church folks would have witnessed her behavior too. So I feel like they're a little complicit in this, especially if they are going to take credit on the side of the exorcism just by virtue of also being church people. You know, we're in this together, getting you healed of this demon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though it was a sort of very much a non-church-based ritual to do so.
Yeah.
To blame Tara's, to say that Tara's anger is her own demon, on one hand, I'm sure that Letty Mae feels that that is a comfort to Tara. Oh, if you get an exorcism, you won't be responsible for any of your outbursts and your behavior. And, I mean, that's horrible parenting, just for one. But for two, Tara's anger is a direct result of her treatment by you as a child. So that's just, like, another thing that you're trying to get out of taking accountability for, which is the way that your child has had to harden to be able to survive in this world because you were a drunk her whole entire childhood.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think, like, it must be so confusing for Tara, like, you know, on the one hand, to be so happy that her mother is, like, making this huge change, but on the other hand, not getting any closure from it, not getting any, like, accountability for it, not getting an apology. Like, no wonder she's lashing out at everybody. No wonder she doesn't trust people.
Yes, and the bummer thing is, she wanted to have that conversation with Sookie, and Sookie's own shit, you know? They're getting in the way of, you know, we already talked about this, but that's the exact conversation Tara wanted to have with Sookie. It's like, how can I parse these feelings of being happy that my mother is sober and continuing to be mad at her? And unfortunately, Sookie couldn't do that.
Yeah, they're just not in a good position to be good friends to each other right now. And it's a shame because both of them could use a good friend right now.
I think there's a really good scene that, based on the discussion I've like realized is even more important, which is that Tara shouts at Hoyt, which obviously is unacceptable.
Sweet little baby boy.
You can kind of justify Tara's, well, not that it needs justification, but you can justify Tara's like fight with Sookie. You can justify what happens between her and Sam, but like Hoyt is an innocent, so innocent. Forever innocent.
Hoyt is doing much in this episode too. He's listening to Sookie's like absolute unhinged bullshit, and he also tried to pay Tara a nice compliment. And like, what? I mean, he just is trying to be a nice guy in Merlot's, and he is just getting like problems from everybody.
And the way he grew up to be such a sweet boy, despite his own mother, like
his awful mother, yeah. Awful in a very different direction. Yeah, he just needs no less awful.
Yeah. He needs so much love. What a sweet boy.
And spoilers, I'm gonna get some. So I think that's the tough thing. I think it's a really useful scene though to show that it's Tara is just like bursting at the seams with the fact that this has happened. It feels like, you know, even with Lafayette, him saying like, well, if the result is there, then it's money well spent. Like, it's been a day, right? Like, let's give it a month or 6 months to, like, demonstrate that this is fixed. You can't fix a broken childhood with a cookie or a pancake. It's certainly not one without an apology or any accountability. So I think it's not anyone else's fault, but it's totally understandable why she's so frustrated and why it bursts out of her at the slightest provocation or even non-provocation, right? And one of the other things she does is sleep with Sam
during the workday, this
is so like he's pouring out this true blood very performatively. Like, are you just buying it just to pour it out in the sink? Like
that,
you're
yes.
embarrassing, you need to stop, because last time he was out of it, like he stopped buying it, right? And now he's just pouring it out just so like people can see that he's pouring it out. And he's, like, mad that Bill is alive, so he's dumping true blood, and he's pulling Tara off the floor, not to reprimand her for being an asshole to customers, but to have sex with her, because he's mad at Sookie that and so his boyfriend
is alive. And they're two-person vampire hater club. Like, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gross. And they're just, like, feeding off of this, like, toxic thing that they have going.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Sam, why are you going to be like, oh, well, you grunt? Like, if you didn't want to have this conversation, don't have that conversation. Like,
save grunting rollouts for somewhat later in the relationship, not after a one workday stand.
And listen, like, she poked at it.
Sleep,
she,
bro.
Yeah, fuck off. Fuck off. So, like she kind of, like, prods into it because she's like, oh, yeah, like, you know, you're good. And he was like, oh, yeah, you're not so bad yourself, which is a totally innocuous statement, which I would take to be, like, you're also good. And she digs into it, but he didn't have
to. Oh, she's looking for a fight.
She's looking for a fight, but he didn't have to give her the fight. He gave her the fight. Like, he could have just been like, no, I just meant that as, like, a, you know, turn of phrase or whatever, instead of being like, well, if you must know. Like, you make these weird noises. Like, he didn't need to do that, man.
He's just an idiot.
He's so fucking stupid.
So, Laz, you and Elise had the conversation about, like, why is Sam letting these bigots and arsonists back into his bar? But apparently, like, vampires are banned now. Sir, they didn't do anything except for have a weird vibe. Like,
I mean, they had a very weird vibe.
They did, but they
like,
didn't actually
I can get that.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think that was the thing that really pissed me off, was like the people who are homophobic and racist to Lafayette, he lets them back in the fucking restaurant.
Yeah.
Totally bullshit. Like, Sam is, I appreciate that my vibe this entire season of podcast has been, oh my God, I had not realized how much I fucking hate Sam. But he is the worst. Like, he is the worst.
Yeah, he's letting these guys back in the bar because they echo his shitty vampire feelings. But in the process, is putting his other employees in danger, essentially, by allowing people that are bigoted against them. And like, making them serve them. Like, that is not, that's not fucking okay.
The shitty vampire stuff didn't even come up until the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Like, he let them in. Back in after
the Lafayette
they
stuff.
Were homophobic assholes to Lafayette. Yeah.
There should have what been a permanent ban right then.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I just don't believe, like, Elise was like, you know, maybe it's a small town. And I'm like, I feel like small towns, people get, like, small towns in England, people get banned from pubs all the time for being dicks.
Yeah.
And then they maybe get their ban rescinded after like 6 months or a year or something. But like, they were back in the next day. Sam is a terrible employer.
Mm-hmm.
He's
on every possible level.
Human being, stroke, not human being, to be discussed further. And yeah, don't like him. Sorry, Melissa. I jumped in with my righteous piss.
No, that's fine.
Sam,
I love it.
On your...
I think that is exactly what was needed.
But yes, the still awful people.
I mean, if we just need to continue to pile on Sam, he gaslights Terry.
Yes.
Yeah, that is not.
Don't gaslight your friends with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
he doesn't gaslight the fucking cop.
And I think it's because, like, on so much of the episode, I was like, I wonder if Sam just didn't have time to, like, once he knew that people had seen him, he was like, I need to concoct a story, and in the meantime, I am just gonna do a little gaslight on Terry because I think that he'll fall for it because he mistrusts his own mind. Like, you are a fucked up, horrible person, Sam Merlot. But
yeah,
I do kind of think that was just like a time killing exercise for him to come up with this lie. But it's not a good lie. And there's no justification for this behavior.
I know.
It's a lie that stands up to approximately one telephone call from fucking Andy Belfleur, not the world's greatest detective.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, you don't want to give them a lie that is, like, traceable. You can't. It, like, defeats the purpose. If they could figure out that it's a lie, then it's a bad lie.
I did want to talk about, like, we're talking about the Sam Terry scene very briefly, which is, like, Terry has this possum penis necklace, which is a very weird detail. But I didn't know if you guys have ever read Sarah by J.T. Leroy.
Mm-mm.
I have not.
Nope.
Tasia, I heard a grunt which obviously is not a Tara grunt or a Serena Williams grunt, but I just want to, like, was that a yes?
Oh, question? No, sorry. That was a no grunt.
Okay. All right. So this is a very, very weird tangent, but, like, there's a novel by a writer called J.T. Leroy called Sarah, which is about it's about prostitution and about transgenderism in children in the South. And there's this sort of focus thing about this character called Sarah, who has this possum penis necklace, and it felt like to me like a reference to that. And this is particularly key because J.T. Leroy, this was supposed to be an autobiographical novel about her or their experiences as a child. Turned out it was completely made up. Like, this is it was a totally made up personality by a pen named by another author. They signed a film deal as J.T. Leroy, which was subsequently sued because you can't sign as a not real person. They hired an actor to play J.T. Leroy.
What?
Wow. If you know the song Cherry Lips by Garbage, that is about J.T. about the character J.T. or about Sarah character J.T. Leroy before all this came out. It's an unbelievable, like, the novel is quite like compelling and interesting, but the story around it is amazing. So, like, I just was like, if people don't know this, they should know about it. It's really crazy.
That's wild.
Wow. I had no idea. I just thought, and this is so unserious compared to what you just, like, told us about what this could be a reference to, but I just thought it was very rude of Sam to try to dim Terry's light, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's also true.
You just tell all your little girlfriends that weird possum penis shit you got going on.
There's a lid for every pot, man. Somebody's going to be really into it.
Yes. Anyway, I just wanted to, like, to me it was like a J.T. Leroy, because it's very Southern boiled, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. Anyway, fun.
It's interesting.
Well, weird. But yeah, I agree. Like, when Sam lies, and as you said, not just lies, gaslights Terry, I'm like, another fucking crime in the book of Sam. Mm-hmm.
I know, and this isn't even the full list of his crimes in this episode.
Yeah. Anyway, whereabouts are we?
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, was it? Is it? I've lost track of episodes now. They're blending into one. This is also the episode that he spies Sookie taking a vitamin,
yes,
and then decides to fucking, yes, question her about it.
Mm-hmm. And she tells him, you know, you don't monitor my bathing and toothbrushing, but I'm out here doing it. And instead of just accepting that, he decides to, like, creep on the bottle and then throw it like a child.
Sookie needs to hire herself an attorney.
Are they not allowed to have privacy? Like, her shit is just on, like, an open shelf in his office.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they need to hire themselves an attorney and take Sam for everything he's got, because he is committing some serious employee like violations.
And he's a landlord.
And he's a fucking landlord.
A cab includes landlords.
So the other thing I think we'll just wrap up Sam is, like, he after gaslighting Terry about the fact that he wasn't, or was in fact, running naked through the woods, he then basically admits to Andy that he was, but then claims that he was a naturist, not because he wanted to be, he's quite ashamed of it really, but because his parents were in Texas. A lie so easily then found out that even Andy Belfleur can work it out in one phone call.
And I mean, if you're going to tell that lie, I mean, don't be specific, and don't make it about, like, parents that, you know, just, I like to jog naked sometimes, I'm weird. The end.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need to say. It makes me feel free and connects me with nature. The end.
Yeah.
It's not that fucking deep, Sam.
Anyway. Tasia's a better liar than
Sam. Yeah, especially because Terry's like, we've all been there.
Yeah. I know, poor Terry, too, is, like, so ready to, like, understand.
Terry's so good in this episode as well. He's, like, Like, Arlene is like, I need a babysitter. My babysitter fell through. And Terry's like, I'll do it. I love kids. And she's like, but do you have a woman? Because my daughter would like a woman in the house. And he's like, I've not had a girlfriend since I got back from... Poor Terry. I'm torn between Terry and Hoyt now in terms of who is the saddest big boy.
Yeah. Well, they're both so sweet.
Two precious boys.
So the reason why Arlene needs a babysitter is Renee is taking her to, what was it, the Red Lobster for dinner. Yes.
They were going to go see a tribute band, and then they were going to go to Red Lobster.
Yeah. And then, unfortunately, the truck breaks down with a flat tire. Except it's not a flat tire. It's a proposal. And it was quite cute.
It was pretty cute.
It is. It's a pretty good one.
Like, I think it fits perfectly for them. But it's, like, so funny because... Like, a lot of people could be, like, freaked out by being, like, on the side of the road, like, at night, potential flat tire. Like, I was so scared, and now you're just proposing to me? Like,
Yeah. She was like, why didn't you say something at the Red Lobster?
I know. She was. But, I think this is a very fitting Renee proposal, and it is pretty cute. And he doesn't even mind that Arlene's like, it never gets old.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the fifth time that she's been proposed to. And as someone who loathed the concept of public proposal, this is the direct opposite of that, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, he asked her to bring the torch out, sorry, the flashlight out of the car. And she's like, it won't work. And then he asked her to check it because he just put new batteries in. She opens it and the ring just falls on the ground whilst he's kneeling down and he picks it up. And smooth.
It's pretty work, it's pretty smooth. It's good pretty job. Good. It's good perfect job. for them. Job. Yeah, like you said.
So they go back and Sookie agrees to be a bridesmaid. And I forgot the name of Arlene's extremely redheaded daughter, but she's going to be a flower girl. And she's very excited about it.
And you know what? Good for Arlene. She's got it going on. She's been proposed to four times, married four times.
Something's going well. Something's not going well, but something also is going well for her.
Things are at least starting well for her.
Yeah.
I think in the book, Renee is one of her ex-husbands. Like, they have, like, an on-again, off-again situation going on.
Yeah, I don't remember, but I haven't read it in a while, so I believe you.
Okay. I think that's wrapped them up, so we can move on to... to Jason and Amy.
Jamie. Oh,
You guys did not meet Amy last episode. So do you want to give a very brief...
I hate her.
On your,
I was going to say, I think Tasia does, yes.
I fucking hate her. She is like this, you know, East Coast rich girl elite that is like trying on... Like she's cosplaying hippy-dippy... culture bullshit, cosplaying poverty basically, and I fucking hate it. She's pretentious, she's smarmy, she's terrible. She's a terrible person, as we see at the end of this episode. She's a bad fucking person. All of that stuff that she does, like, oh, like with the goddess, with Gaia, where, you know, I make my own jewelry and la 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 la, but she it's all masking just like a deeply selfish, self-centered person who is all about just chasing her own pleasure, basically.
I think that after I saw this for the first time, I had like a daydream of just being in a restaurant and just waiting tables flawlessly for no reason. I thought that would be like very cool. It's honestly kind of unhinged now.
I will say for her though that
extra labor.
Right. Like I will say for her that like she is like clearly just like a wealthy girl that's like being rebellious. I think it was like in that introductory episode where she's like, I watched that one with our friend Corinne, and Amy talks about like, oh, my parents wanted me to do pre-law, but, you know, I said, fuck that and did philosophy. And Corinne, who is a lawyer, was sitting next to me and going, yeah, there's a lot of lawyers that do philosophy before law school. Like that is a very common pre-law track.
Oh, that's really like, get over context. Yourself. Thank you, Corinne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's a pick me. She's very like, I'm not like other girls. I'm, you know, different and rebellious, and I'm connected with nature.
Well,
but really,
one
I'm
of
just
her tactics is so good, because she treats Jason like he is not like the other girls, when he very much is exactly like all of them.
Yeah,
and he sort of has this realization while they're together that he's a piece of shit, and she's like, no, you're good, like, you're worthwhile, you have something inside of you that's like kind and decent. And it's like she is like telling him
and wise
all of these like all these softer aspects that she is like seeing potentially within him are worth discovering and worth bringing to the forefront. And like, and then she does this shit with the vampire Eddie, and so it's like, I have no idea, like, what your values are, and you're giving Jason whiplash, and he is just not smart enough to deal with, like, parsing what you're saying and how it differs from your actual behavior.
Yeah, like, can't tell, like, how full of shit she is, so he's taking everything she says so earnestly. And some of what she's saying, like, is good for him. A lot of what she does is, like, you know, to lift him up and to make him, you know, like, kind of pull him a little bit further away from like the toxic masculinity stuff. Like, that's all good stuff. If she wasn't so full of shit, it would be great. But she is completely full of shit, and it's all meaningless.
Yeah, and her colors come out pretty quick. I do want to know, before we realize we hate Amy for sure, I think it's nice that Sookie warns her. Because it's like, I think that Sookie's being kind of snarky, but it's like, also, you don't know Jason. And it's Jason. So it's like, even though Amy has sort of like an attitude about it, I and Sookie's kind of, you know, like I said, being snarky about it, I do still think at the base level, like, it's nice that if you see Jason with a nice girl to say them like, hey, he maybe isn't exactly what you think he is. Unless you,
I mean, Sookie's
think he's stuck.
Sookie's entire experience of Amy is her being nice and kind and helping out at the restaurant. Like, that's literally it. And her experience of Jason is whatever, 23 years of bullshit, right? So, like, you can understand why she's, her default is like, if there's a nice girl, Jason has tricked her rather than the other way around. But yeah, no, I mean, like, I described her as the antagonist from Common People last episode, because she's fucking poverty tourist and absolute garbage. Everything she puts on is nonsense. And she's patronizing as fuck the way she does it as well. And yeah, literally, it's her basically being like, even the like the initial scene of this episode, right, which is them waking up in the afterglow of a glorious night of V and passion, except actually it wasn't passion, apparently. She never took her panties off. They never had sex. Do we believe this?
Jason cannot.
I feel like Jason
deal with
could
it.
Be tricked. Yeah. I feel like she put the pants back
on. I think that even if they
didn't have
penetrative sex, they probably did actually have sex. And this is just not a time of TV that was going to spend any time trying to, like, you know, deliberate between those things. But, like, I think
you
together,
mean the TV show, which opens with a hand job and has dirt fucking in the middle
of it. I think together on V, if your tits are out, and you think of your tits as a sex organ, then you had sex. So I think they did, even if Amy has her panties on.
Yeah, she's just like, I'm not that kind of girl. Like,
well, yeah, and she's clearly like, oh, like, I have such an expanded mind and this and that. But she's like clearly still believing that like penetrative sex is the only kind of
doesn't
sex
count.
There is.
Like, come on, Amy.
When they definitely did stuff. You know, was she the girl in high school that was like, I'm a virgin, I only have anal sex? It's like that the anal sex doesn't count. That was her in high school.
Oh, I mean, I like, I was basically saying, I think she put her knickers back on. Like, I think they had sex. And like,
I just
think
she's
lying. She's
like trying to trick Jason by being like, I'm so magical that you can feel this good without it even being sex.
Yeah. Imagine what it would be like if we actually had sex.
I know,
sex.
How manipulative. Speaking of a manipulative, I think, like, yeah, the helping out with the waitressing. I mean, clearly she's done some waitressing and she's very competent, which is great. They need somebody competent at Merlot's, and that's great for, you know, for her stepping up and whatnot. But I do feel like it is part of her manipulation. You know, she's selling herself as like a kind of person that she really isn't, because she's there to get her like hookups, her drug hookups. And Jason has told.
Yeah, I thought.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just like the way she goes, because Arlene says, "How did you know what the table numbers are?" And she was like, "Oh, I just assumed they were clockwise." I'm like, "Why did that?" Is a weird thing. Like, why didn't she just say, "Well, there's a sticker behind the bar which has all the table numbers in it," which is basically like every restaurant I've or bar I've ever worked in has like a diagram.
She's like, "I swung by
the
host stand.
A map." which shows me what the numbers
well,
are.
Well,
like,
and
it was weird to
I'm
be
sure
like
her first food she brings out has a ticket with it that has the table number on it, and she found the people that ordered that food, and so, you know,
because they were shouting, "Where's my
we
food?"
Just, yeah. Like, that's the problem.
Yeah. And she does. And,
yeah,
know,
I was
right.
just about to say, it's not that she just think it. It's facts.
We also have like. Yeah, we have knowledge before and after that scene that Sookie and Arlene perhaps don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the second she starts going into withdrawal, the shine comes off and that facade starts to get stripped away. And she, like, immediately, instead of, like, trying to find somebody to buy V through, you know, like an intermediary to buy weed or buy weed, buy V from Lafayette. To give to them, they decide to stalk him and follow him to his source, and then not even try to buy directly from that source, but just go straight into assault and kidnapping. Vamp-napping?
Yeah, and Amy's like a fucking professional. I mean, Jason.
This is not her Jason, first rodeo.
Jason, you are so far in over your head.
Mm-hmm. It's so messy, because Eddie is so... Like, we see Lafayette with Eddie before they show up.
Yeah, so Lafayette, so they basically stalk Lafayette. And again, I agree, like, also whilst Lafayette 100% does not trust Jason, he might trust Amy. Like, if Amy, like, approached him and was like, "Look, I know this guy's a dummy, but, like, I've got control of this situation. Will you sell it to me?" I think he'd probably be a little bit more like, "Yeah, sure."
Well, yeah, and he's about the money.
But anyway, she doesn't do it.
Like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So they stalk Lafayette. He drives away from his place. He drives into suburbia to this sort of small bungalow of a house where this older vampire is. What's he listening to? He's listening to some sort of, like, I don't know, Lemos music, and or perceptually Lemos, and he's clearly like analogous to an older gay gentleman who's got a young hot hookup, and in this case what Lafayette is doing is hooking up with him but taking a couple of vials of blood or a V before they do hook up. But like, Lafayette is obviously exploiting him,
mm-hmm.
but he's like aware of it, and it feels I don't know, it feels
this poor sweet vampire is like
wholesome. Yeah,
he's like you know, you would want to do this even if I wasn't giving you the blood, right? And Lafayette says, like, "Oh, you think I hook up with all of my business associates? But, like, you're not paying him. So that is what you're doing. Like, you are paying him through sex, basically."
It's sex
but
work, right?
But Lafayette is, it doesn't feel exploitative. Like, Lafayette, it feels like he maybe doesn't, like, deeply care about Eddie, but he's very sweet to him, and he doesn't want him to feel exploited, and that says a lot. Like, they have a very nice kind of rapport, a very sweet. Like, Eddie is, like, we don't know a lot about Eddie right now, but he's just a really sweet older guy that is just lonely and isn't like a traditional vampire.
And hook up with Lafayette mm-hmm. once a week.
And whomst among us? Come on.
Well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... Because at one point Lafayette is like, you know, "Why don't you go to the clubs? I know you like sex." And he's like, "Why would I need to do that? I've got you," basically. Like, he wants a quiet home life. He watches, what's it called? Fang Files, which is like sort of weird human vampire propaganda TV show. And he's just like a bit sort of older and quieter and domestic and kind of unthreatening. Mm-hmm. And Lafayette is, you know, he's taking advantage of it, but he's not, I don't know, it doesn't feel sordid.
Yeah.
That relationship. It feels sort of okay. Anyway, and then Lafayette leaves, and Amy gets Jason to say, hey, Lafayette sent me for you, to get Eddie to open the door. And then Amy throws a fucking bag of silver chainmail over Eddie's head. Not fun.
Yeah, it is way too practiced. She's got a whole system down. She's got fucking chainmail. Like, this is not her first rodeo. And I'm really curious as to what is Amy's backstory? How does she end up in Shreveport? Like, she met Jason at this bar and took off with him in his truck. But how did she get there? How did she end up there? She didn't have a car. She just immediately moves in with Jason. Like, what is she doing? Is she just running from town to town looking for, you know, going to vampire bars looking for a victim, basically?
She had that big fucking bag in Fantasia. Does it imply that she had the chainmail in the bag as well?
I think so. I would not doubt it. Yeah.
She is living out of that bag fully.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yes. Anyway, so poor, that's kind of how that storyline sort of ends up for the episode. Jason's starting to have misgivings, and then is somewhat horrified by her throwing the chainmail over him. Again, not something that is, one assumes, easy to come by. Unless this is an American thing and you guys have silver chainmail in Walmart or whatever. I
will never tell.
Or is that more a Best Buy thing rather than a Walmart thing? I'm saying these names of these shops like I've been to any of them.
You're not missing out on a lot.
No.
All right. Do we have any other things we want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we covered all my stuff.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
I had a few like lines that popped out that I thought were fun. So like after Amy is serving at Malotte's, Arlene shouts at Sam, I think we might have found a replacement for Dawn. And Sookie just turns to Jason and goes, look like
that's
you did too.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Boom.
I think it's funny because they don't really mention it in the episode, but I think it bears, you know, just at least thinking about a little bit, that Jason is technically still under suspicion of murder.
Yeah. I know. I was thinking earlier that it feels like when we were talking about how Sookie went to Shreveport to like try to clear her brother's name, but it's like that doesn't seem to matter at this point because it's been like 5 minutes since somebody was murdered. So like we're over that now, apparently, for now.
I mean, like last episode, three vampires and a fangbanger were Molotov cocktailed. So, but this one was definitely not Jason because, as usual, he was having sex with all of them.
Yeah, I do have something to say, which is that when Sam talks to the police about, because the police come to talk to Sam and Merlot's because a freaking hate crime originated at this bar. So they're talking to Sam about it, and he's like, "Well, to be honest, it'd be cool if you just never even found them. Vampire murder's great by me. What a loser."
Pile of trash, Sam Merlot.
There's also a joke which I assume was on in the book because it feels like a joke that works way better on paper than it does in like spoken language. But Vampire Eddie is like, "You told me you go for Merlot," and Lafayette is like, "I told you I work at Merlot," and I'm like, that. Joke. There's no way that joke works. No one says that and goes for that. Like, that is a on the book page joke, right?
Yeah, that one doesn't really work for me.
Yeah, I think that was like I don't think it's in the book just because Lafayette isn't really a part of it, and I don't think Eddie's in the book at all. So unless it's under a different context, but yeah, that feels like a writer's room joke where they were like, "Ha. This is a good one," but it doesn't really work spoken as well as it works on page.
Sookie says of Eric, "He cannot take me out like a library book," and I just want to be clear that Eric can take me out like a library book.
Ditto.
And there are no late fees.
auto renew.
There's an awful lot of people wearing hot tank tops in this episode, and I just want to continuously shout out everyone's arms in True Blood. A lot of good arms.
Mm-hmm. They all have so much time to hit the gym that we just don't see.
In the gym. Which, off screen.
Tara's got a lot of frustration to work out.
We didn't really talk about, like, Tara and Sam fucking, which I don't want to talk about it because it just makes me fucking hate Sam ongoing. Anyway, we also get like a full scene of Steve Newlin in this episode, who might be known to future watchers from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yes.
But he is the son of one of the preachers who died about half a season ago now. And he's trying to be like the friendly face of the church. And he's just, you know, asking questions and saying, you know, I want our kids to, you know, not worry about, you know, what monsters are going to attack them in the playground. To which I go, this is totally irresponsible journalism. What fucking vampires are in a playground during the day? Like, that's not how vampires
work.
Or like,
why are your small children at the playground during night? Like, at
that
night.
Is such
that's
a good
irresponsible
point.
Parenting.
Is
this the first call out we get of the church that the Newlands represent, the Fellowship of the Sun? I don't know if
it's
they mentioned that with
possible.
His dad.
I don't think we've mentioned it on this here podcast yet. No. At least
the Fellowship of the Sun, right? Mm-hmm. Is that it?
Yeah, anti-vampire sentiments baked right into the name.
Which is very much, if anyone reads or watches Wheel of Time, there's a group called the Children of the Light in that book and TV show. And those guys are hateful fuckers as well, so expect more.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how relevant all of these, like, news snippets we're seeing still are. I mean,
it's deeply depressing.
They're kind of a bummer to watch, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, every time we get those, my soul is just like, woof.
Yeah, that somehow we've gotten like further backwards than forwards.
Yeah, it's a big bummer.
All right, are we good on the meat of the episode?
We're good.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can just point out that our new character for this episode was Eddie, the sweet vampire who just wants to watch Heroes and hook up with Lafayette. Just a nice man.
Which, mm-hmm. you know, I would. That was a nice way to spend some time. Sex with Lafayette and watching TV. All good. Albeit, don't hate watch like Steve Newlin, dude. That's not fun.
Yeah. All right. What's most chaotic?
My most chaotic thing in this episode is Sookie telling Hoyt and Renee all about her exploits with Bill.
I have to co-sign this one with you. That is absolutely the most chaotic thing.
The energy coming off of her in that scene is just pure chaos.
Yeah, like she's got like wild eyes. She's just like very unhinged.
She does. She's I'm gonna say most chaotic in a bad way is Sam gaslighting a guy with PTSD.
Yeah.
Like
it's dark
like,
stuff from Sam
really
Merlot.
Fucking, I mean, I have a low bar for Sam Merlot at the best of times, but that is not acceptable. Mm-hmm. The two really unacceptable chaotic things is Tara, don't fucking be mean to Hoyt, and Sam, mm-hmm. don't gaslight Terry with PTSD.
Yeah. Cosign. Does anyone have a super horny thing they would like to put at the top of the horny list?
It's literally just the dirt fucking.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing hornier than that. You gotta be real fucking horny to let that dirty of a dick get anywhere near you.
Yes. That I thought you were dead horned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do.
I mean, I agree. Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the only other thing I have is Eric in a bath at Bill's house.
Oh, yeah.
Was also was pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Also, this is the first episode that Pam has been in that she didn't entirely steal the episode as well.
Oh, and you know what? I'm just realizing that we had multiple types of vampire soup in this episode. The vampire soup in like the goop form in the coffins, and the vampire soup that was Eric sitting in a bath.
Mm-hmm.
Ayo.
That's more like vampire tea. Right?
That's fair.
I think we should give a horny shout out to Eddie. And his...
He is very horny, yes.
His horny for Lafayette. It's important to note. It's very pure.
As pure as horny gets. It is very soft, yes. All right, do we have any spoilers or book notes that we want to
talk about? It's not that exciting. The stuff with the house burning down plays out a little bit differently in the book. Bill and Sookie do this like time away from each other that doesn't really show up in the show. But ultimately, I mean, it's we're basically still on the path, like in terms of like Sookie and Bill's storyline.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean, I've not read the books. The only spoiler thing is, again, like we've taken a break really for a week or two from the, who's the person killing the women who've been with vampires. Mm-hmm. So we've, but we're also on like episode 8 and there are 4 more this season. So I suspect.
Yeah. So by the time I was done reading the content in the book that goes through this episode, I think that my Kindle was telling me I had like 17 minutes left in the book or something.
Oh, wow.
Well, and yeah, and you know, that definitely bears out when we talk about like how many stories are straight up not in the book. Tara, Lafayette. Right. Whatever Jason's doing outside of being suspected of murder, like all of that is add on in. I think it's done. I think it's done very successfully.
So Amy's not in the book then.
Jason is talking to some girl that he seems to have like more legitimate feelings for, but like we don't know anything about her. I think her name's Liz.
Oh yeah.
Liz Ehrman. Is this a 30 Rock crossover?
Or Lizzie Kaplan.
Oh, funny.
Or Liz Kaplan. Yeah, that's the.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Weird. Yeah.
Is it just plugs and we're out?
I guess we're good, yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa.
Yeah, you can find me on the website formerly known as Twitter and Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow. And I do an occasional podcast that is just going to be probably put up there on the YouTubes called Wild Pretty Things. So you can check that out as well.
You can find me on Instagram at Ragey Cakes and also at my other podcast, a YA book podcast called Act Ya Age. You can find us at Act Ya Age on Instagram. And
you can find me on Blue Sky at Lozymandias. I'm kind of getting off Twitter. You can find me looking for joy and inspiration in Isaac Asimov at The Asimov Cast. We probably finished season 1 and I might be having some special guest episodes with certain people, one of whom might be on this podcast right now, before I start season 2, so depending on when this comes out. But yeah, that's me.
All right, so of course we want to thank DJ Empirical for our incredible theme. You can find the podcast on the...
Yeah, let's take a brief pause and just be like, this is actually the first episode we've recorded since we've properly heard the theme, and it's so fucking...
It goes so hard.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard this theme? Come on.
Yeah, the continuity of when anyone listening to the podcast heard the theme versus when we heard the theme is like not exact. It's about as like correct as the continuity of like the timeline of this actual episode we just discussed.
Yeah.
But that shit is a fucking banger.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. Yes, fucking great, mate.
You can find the pod on Twitter, or what was formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Fangbangers Pod. You can email us your chaotic, horny thoughts. Keep it to True Blood, please. At fangbangerspod@gmail.com. Next week will be the episode. I don't speak French. Somebody else say this.
Plaisir d'amour.
Wow. Hot. All right.
I'll be available for speaking French. wait, is that a Fratelli's lyric? No, that's different. Never mind. I'm Lozzie, and my blood type is the positioning of Eric's thumb in the bar.
I'm Tasia, and my blood type is vampire soup.
I'm Melissa, and my blood type, just for this one episode, is Red Lobster Proposal.
Oh.
Bye.
Bye.